Hello, everyone. Welcome to Setter Talk. I am your host, Kyle Warren. This podcast is sponsored by Embark Vet and Dr. Tim's Pet Food. Embark Vet is a DNA testing company focused on helping breeders and purebred dog enthusiasts understand and improve the genetic health of their dogs. Embark's DNA test provides a comprehensive assessment of your dog's genetic health, genetic diversity, and physical traits. Embark's DNA testing process was created in partnership with Cornell University College of Veterinary Medicine, and test results are accepted by OFA and other leading canine health organizations. To learn more, visit embarkvet.com/breeders. And by Dr. Tim's Pet Food, created by veterinarian and accomplished musher Dr. Tim Hunt. Dog food formulas promoting stamina, endurance, and performance through proper nutrition. Dr. Tim's has been fueling champions for many years in the Iditarod, the field trial circuit, and hardworking hunting dogs all across North America. To learn more about the trusted source of nutrition for the canine athlete, visit drtims.com. Hello, everyone. We have a very special guest for you today on this episode. Should be an awesome show. We had a couple audio issues, one drop call and another time where our audio was a little funky and we couldn't hear each other. But thankfully, all the podcasts got recorded just a little bit in a couple pieces we had to patch together here. But I think you're going to really enjoy this episode with Andrea Cavaglia and myself talking dogs and lots of other things outdoors and in our upbringing. So very much look forward to sharing this with you and enjoy. Hello, everyone. It's been a while since we've had a Setter Talk episode. Today we have a special guest. We have Andrea Cavaglia. He's a filmmaker, big game hunter, and a setter man. We're speaking with him all the way from Northern Italy. And I wanted to welcome him to the show. Andrea, thanks for talking
with us
today.
Hello. Thank you for having me. And sorry, this is my first podcast and it's my first podcast in English. So sorry if I'll have some problem during the way, but please help me out and I think we'll do it fine.
Yes, we'll do just fine. It should be a great show. So I guess I'll start off with, you know, I've been the upsides to social media, been following you since around 2017. And what led me to originally reach out to you was a video that you had posted in March of 2018 of one of your family's dogs named Duca. And it was an exceptional video and really struck a chord with me. And so I reached out to you and we started talking and thinking about planning a trip in the future. And
thanks, Bobby.
Yeah. We finally made it happen. And we're going to talk a lot more about my trip later on in the show, but I really wanted to have the audience get to know you better. I can't thank you, your wife, Marta, your entire family for having me over there and the generosity that you guys showed. It was for anybody that knows me, I am not a seasoned traveler. I pretty much live right where I want to be. And it was only the second time I've ever traveled outside of the United States. So it was a big leap for me and you guys were very welcoming and just made my experience, not just with the dogs over there and for my trip, but just the traveling in general, just a 5-star experience. So I can't thank you and your family enough for that.
It was our pleasure.
Yes. Thank you so much. So why don't you tell the audience just about you, who you are, a little bit of history about your childhood, growing up with your father and, your entire life being immersed in the world of setters. From what I understand, your father's had these dogs for 30 or 40 years and love to share with the audience about your upbringing and whatnot.
Yeah, sure. So as you told, my father started to let's say breed English Setter when he was 20, 25. So he's almost 40 years now, and I was lucky to grow up with setters, with hunting dogs, because they really. It's really what made me start to follow him and hunt here in Italy. I changed during the past years because this was for me a passion only. So we were hunting always together. We were spending time in the mountain training dogs. And then when I was 18 or 19 and I was at school, I had this opportunity to start to do filming as a job. And I'm super happy that I took this road and that I'm actually became a filmmaker. But in the downside of it, most of the good season here in Italy to bird hunt, that is basically from end of September to late November. I'm a lot on the road and I'm a lot outside of Italy. So I don't have the same time I had in the past for this passion and for our dog. And this is kind of the downside of working in this business, I think.
But from what I gather, I mean, you're always very busy, but certainly hunting season is a busy work time for you. You and your brother, but you tend to participate a lot with the dogs probably during the training season leading up to this season, I would imagine, right?
Yeah, that's like train all season and then hunt maybe 4 or 5 thousand times. But you know, I think if you really like dogs, it's not really much about hunting anymore. It's more like I probably get the same feeling if we are training than hunting. No.
Yes, I couldn't agree more. If it's you know, we wouldn't do it if we didn't have the dogs, right? You know, so it would not feel the same. And I think most serious dog people that hunt upland birds, you know, can certainly identify with that feeling. So that's really awesome. Tell us stepping away from the dogs and the birds for a moment, living in Italy, and again, I know you travel all over Europe and the world doing various hunting related films. Tell us just about Italy's native big game species. I know you have the red stag, the boar, I might pronounce it incorrectly, the chamois. So, just tell us a little about that. I know you're a big game hunter as well, and we talked about that when I was over there quite a bit. I visited one of your wild boar locations with you. So just share with the audience a little bit about your Italian big game.
Yeah. So I think we are quite lucky over here because we have very different terrain and so animals also. Where I live in the mountain, we hunt red deer, chamois, wild boars, roe deer. They are just smaller, the smallest animal we have. And we have ibex that we are not allowed to hunt. We have ground dog. I'm not sure if this is the right English name, like the one we saw together.
Marmots. The marmots.
Marmots. Yep. We have also quite a few different upland birds because we can hunt black grouse, we can hunt ptarmigan, we can hunt rock partridge up here in the mountain. Then we have just a bit lower the woodcock, And if you go all the way to Turin or to the flat area of Italy, we have pheasant, we have bobwhite quail, we have Hungarian partridge. So it's very also red-legged partridge. So let's say it's very diverse. And for me, big game hunting at the moment is like easier to do because it doesn't really require the time you need to put in for dog hunting, especially if like you have like here in Italy a very short season and fixed dates. So I don't know how it works. You told me how it works over there. So basically, you can pick a day and you have like 80 or 100 days a season that you can hunt.
It's our upland hunting season is definitely time wise we're much more fortunate than you when it comes to opportunities to hunt. We can our season My hunting season opens on Thursday, and between the state that I live in and the state that I live close to that I hunt in as well, I will pretty much be able to hunt over 100 days straight,
That's crazy.
not that anybody on the planet is able to bag five ruffed grouse a day, but that's the legal limit. We have like a possession limit too, so you're allowed to have 10 in possession for one hunter. So my family and I, we're all growing feathers with the number of ruffed grouse sometimes that we eat, because I hunt 450 to 500 hours a season. I'm just fortunate that's my life. But yes, anybody that has the time to hunt pretty much can hunt sun up to sundown every day, for 100 days straight. And if you start to incorporate other states, that season can easily become about 5.5 months long of
Yeah,
hunting.
that's crazy. Yeah,
Yeah, very, very different.
here is maybe similar in the big game scenario because you got different season for different animals, and you get also like a longer timing. So even if I'm traveling when I'm home, there is always a chance to hunt big game somewhere. And for bird is not like that. So we have a very short season. It starts in the first of October, but we can only hunt on Wednesday and Sunday in my area. So maybe for like the rock partridge, that is one of my favorites, or like ptarmigan, we have four. Let's say if it's a good season, 4 days, and then everything is over. And last couple of years, for the opening days and the first week of the hunting season, I wasn't able to be home. So when I get home, it's already finished. And yeah, so.
That was something that I found, again, given our upland hunting opportunities here, that when you were telling me, they kind of break the Alps into regions, and you can have 25 black grouse taken, like 14 rock partridge, eight ptarmigan, and then you said, and that's for all the 100 people, in that area. So it certainly is much more about the dogs, the pastime of being outdoors, than it certainly is harvesting birds, and while sure, it would definitely be nice to be able to harvest more birds. There's a part of me, like when I was visiting over there, I mean, certainly the romantic idea as to why I came over there in the first place, all about these dogs. But it being training season, just learning about your hunting culture and your systems of hunting and your strategies and everything goes into it. There was very obvious going with you and your family to work the dogs. There's a not just for your family, but as a country, the heritage of upland hunting, and that's really what's, in my eyes, when I compare it to what us Americans have here. While it's a heritage here as well, it's a different type of deep-seated, deep-rooted heritage that I certainly see, your father passing down to you and your brother, and hopefully someday, you doing the same with your children. Just very fascinating. I find it interesting the between your three primary species that you guys hunt in your area, the black grouse, ptarmigan, and rock partridge. All of it to me was an amazing landscape. I've never traveled west and hunted in the Rocky Mountains, which are kind of equivalent elevations that we were working the dogs in together. And but for me, actually walking on those mountainsides, that was a new experience. The mountains that I come from were about half that size where I grew up and lived for the first 39 years of my life. Interesting. It seemed like you and your family, and then your couple friends that we spoke to that hunt, everybody seems like, when I would ask, like, everybody seems to, their true joy is that the ptarmigan, so you guys seem to like the higher country and the open country, and it's absolutely gorgeous. But it's funny, back here in the United States, our western states, Montana, Idaho, Nevada, like we have open country as well, up in the mountains, and even just the prairie in general. A lot of people, they see the dog work, and I think a lot of people very much enjoy that. And I found that interesting that your couple friends we spoke to and your family, you guys all very much seem to enjoy ptarmigan. You enjoy it all, but it certainly seemed that your favorite was ptarmigan.
For me it's true. It's probably because we cannot really hunt them a lot anymore, and it's always the most difficult and the most rewarding also animal you can find here. And it's probably because you have to wait so long for one season to the other, and maybe for one season you are not even allowed to take one shot at them, that he always stays in your heart, let's say. When, to be honest, when I had to move to hunt woodcock, because that's what we basically do. We start up in the mountains, and then as soon as the season over, we have all the way to the end of December. And then it's 3 days a week, so Wednesday, Sunday, and Monday. We can hunt woodcock, and we can actually hunt 20 birds per season. So it's a bigger number, bigger opportunity for a dog. Also, is very important. So they are not just there running around and seeing some birds. Is probably what we are now. Hunting and training our dog for most of the season, but to be honest, for me, growing up hunting in open and high country, I don't get the same feeling in the woods in the lower side, knowing that 15-20 minutes away from woodcock areas, I can hunt ptarmigan. They are there. I can't hunt them. So
No, I agree.
I really love mountain. So basically, everything that is mountain related, everything that is mountain hunting, for me is the best.
It was Interesting. I want to keep talking about your work and your travels, but yeah, when we were in the mountains, again, it was all beautiful to me, and it's just a different feeling that when you drop down from Ptarmigan and Rock Partridge country into the tree line for black grouse. You know, it's a very different feeling. Just as you change that elevation, and for me, being strictly a forest hunter, you know, I resonated with the black grouse very much. To me, that was one of the highlights of my life, getting to watch you guys with those dogs in your forested habitat. And but it's funny, because a lot of people, while we have avid rough grouse hunters here, or forest hunters here, we have multiple species of forest birds. Many people enjoy the open country and seeing the dogs stretch out and seeing them work the whole time. Let's talk about just the variety of jobs that you've done. And we spoke quite a bit when I was there about you were telling me about different jobs like that you had done in Russia in the past, and Scotland. But take a few minutes and tell us, just tell us about, every time, we're messing you stuff, I'm in Poland now, I'll message you when I get home. I'm in Croatia now, I'll message you when I get home. So you are a very seasoned traveler for your career. And give us a little little more background on what you've done and where you've done it.
So I don't think we have time to go really in detail about that,
Sure,
but
sure.
I'm
Maybe just
lucky.
the highlights.
The best part. No, I'm very lucky that my jobs takes me in a lot of different country, and let's say the best part for me of being able to do that is that you get to hunt with different people and not always have a different style of hunting. Let's say I think it, in all the travels you always learn something. Like I've been in the US a couple of times. I've seen I was in Oregon. I think it was close to Portland, hunting chakar up in the in the, on in those hills. Then we moved to the Idaho for pheasant, South Dakota, Georgia, South Georgia, and then east of Europe, let's say. Every country you go, there is a different there are different tradition, there are different type of hunting. Like for us as dog lovers or pointing dog lovers, if you don't go to Scotland to see a driven hunt, let's say game shooting for grouse, you don't think it's something that they should do. Like why you have to shoot 500 birds in a day? That's like all the birds I need for my life with my dogs. But then when you get there and you see how it's done and the passion that people have for that and the effort they put on the ground to have all those birds, then you get to kind of like understand why they are doing it. And it's always like it's very difficult to judge something if you didn't see it. And I'm happy that I've seen different stuff and different styles.
You had mentioned to me when we were talking in the past that one of your dream jobs would be to work in Scotland at these estates where they're managing the habitat for grouse. You said it's just unreal. It's unbelievable the lengths to which the efforts they put into making it like 100% the very best that they can.
Yeah, that's like something that we cannot do here in Italy because the wildlife is owned by the state, let's say. It's owned by Italy.
Yeah.
And so there is not really any interest in make it grow or make it be at the full potential that it could be, you know? Like, we have very nice black grouse areas, but they are limited to the space where they can find cover, food, water. So it's super natural, natural, of course. But the amount of ground that has all those trees close together and for all the season, it's very small. And
sure.
What they do up there in Scotland for grouse is like they work to create the best environment they can to provide food protection and water and shelter in the winter to an animal that at this point can really thrive and survive, because at the moment here in Italy is not a very good time for upland hunter, because we don't have anymore the landscape. It's not about shooting birds, it's more about like they don't have a place where they can breed, and they don't have a place where they can grow in numbers, because it's so limited, no? Like, all the last wild animals are like 90% in the Alps or in the mountains. Alps and Apennino. I don't know how to say that in English. But basically in all the mountains of Italy, because there is no agriculture. But the flat areas are like 100% agriculture, intensive, a lot of houses, road, and pesticide. So what I really love about a place like Scotland, or maybe where you live, is that you can just go outside and see birds and animals everywhere.
Yeah,
and this is something like,
Yeah, no, I'm sitting on my porch right now while we record this, and it was nice and cool here this morning. We kept having our inside joke as to trying to figure out the difference between Celsius and Fahrenheit, but it was 34 degrees Fahrenheit here this morning, nice and cold, and that gets the birds moving. So while I've been sitting here on my porch, I've watched four ruffed grouse cross my driveway. And, you know, while I'm talking to you, and all the dogs are staring, from their kennels in the windows here, at these birds right now. So yeah, it's, I mean, habitat, means a lot. And, you know, I mean, your birds are absolutely amazing, but yeah, it's, all over the world, you know, certainly upland birds, struggle more than others, but, another place, I guess, that, I'm sure the listeners would love to hear about, is Russia. You know, I guess you were telling me how pretty much a lot of Europeans, you know, they do enjoy hunting woodcock, and your woodcock come from Russia, and you had the opportunity to do some work there.
Yeah. So the first time I flew over, let's say, because I landed in Moscow, and then we flew all the way to Siberia. I really understood why we keep having all those woodcock over here in the winter, because you cannot really estimate how big the habitat for woodcock is over there. Like, you take a plane and it's like 8 hours flying over forest. It looks 100% the same for 8 hours with no people, no house, no car, and possibly no one that is hunting there. So they really have a place where they can breed and where they can do the best to grow up in numbers. And then, of course, they have a lot of pressure when they are coming towards Europe. In Italy, they are probably the most hunted bird. And all across Europe, we have a lot of Italians that they are traveling to follow them during migration, like the start now in end of August or September to the north, like Sweden or Lettony, and they go all the way down to Greece or Sicily in the winter, and then they go all the way up again until March in the north of Europe again. So there is a big discussion about we should probably hunt them in lower number and with let's say a lower hunting pressure. But to be honest, the number are not changing too much. There is years where we have a lot of book talk, year where we have a few, but it's mostly related to how the season is going over there in Russia during the breed season.
Yeah,
because it's just so big and so vast that you for me, the first time I saw it, I was like, I cannot believe this. It's like how many million or billion of woodcock that there are there.
Sure. Yeah, I don't know. So this isn't necessarily a fact because I haven't looked it up, but I think Russia has something like 6 or 7 time zones. You know, has a many time zones. Like you said, you fly from one end to the other, it takes over 8 hours, you know? So
no, I was not to the other hand. That's the point. Probably from one side to the other side, it can take like 11 or 12 hours. I don't know.
Yeah.
To go all the way to Kamchatka is crazy.
Uh-huh.
And there is maybe some hunters there that hunt woodcock on night flights or early morning flights.
Yeah.
But there is no culture for bird hunting with dogs, and there is I don't know very few hunters for all the space,
and
that's the biggest problem we have here in Italy, is that we are such a small country with a lot of people and a lot of woodcock hunter, because I don't know how many English setter you breed over there in the States in general or in your country. But for Europe, Italy is like top one in breeding. I don't want to say wrong numbers, but it's thousands of dog every year.
Yeah.
And those dog are bred to do something.
Sure. Yeah. No, it's certainly Italy is is one of the leading countries in English setters for sure. We breed a lot. Obviously, our country is much larger than yours, you know, so that's understandable. As you know, having been to this country as well, you know, you travel all over the world, and the style of dogs changes as well with the people and the habitat and whatnot. Going back to the dogs, and you know, tell our audience a little bit more about your father and his dogs. You know, I had a great appreciation just for kind of watching him go through his system. You know, everybody, all breeders, all trainers, you know, they have their systems down. And anytime, like, I might have friends or clients come here and they see me racing around doing all my things with the dogs, they're always asking, like, you know, can I help you with something, Kyle? And I'm like, no, I got my system, thanks, you know. And they just kind of stand
father.
There. Yeah, your father, I you know, very much had a lot of appreciation for, he's a very, very structured man, and you know, has his systems, and he's learned over the years, you know, what works for him and what works for his dogs. But maybe try to tell us just a little about him and his dogs, and, you know, the way that he is with them, and the amount of time that he spends to them, because I know besides his full-time job that he has, you know, his setters are his life.
Yeah, that's true. So I don't think I ever met then I ever met someone with the same passion, because you know, he wakes up every morning to for his full-time job at 2 a.m. Then he's working, let's say, all the way up to lunch at 1 p.m. And then a normal guy in the afternoon will probably sleep a little bit, but most of his afternoon is out with dogs. And for me, it's like, it's crazy. It's like, I can understand like being out in the weekends with, for your passion.
Sure.
But for him is like something more. He's obsessed by it. And to, I think if you have to do something and you truly want to make it worth, you need to be really focused on that. Like, there is a lot of people here that have dogs. They live maybe with the family, or they live in kennels. But then if you have a work, you cannot really train them during the week or take them out, or they are spending time there, but only like in kennels or in the house. And then once a week, maybe they are outside, not all the season around. And that's like 85, I think, percent of dogs here in Italy lives. So they're just waiting for the season to be here. Maybe they are out, let's say, one or two times in a month.
Sure.
And for me, that's not a life that a hunting dog should live. Like, they are built and bred and born to hunt and to be outside and to chase animal. Mm-hmm. And so I really, because probably I grew up watching him, but I really love how much time my father puts into them.
Yeah, it's like, very, like for, very you, no?
for you it's a job, so it's like a full-time job, and it takes, let's say, all your time during 6 or 7 days a week.
Yeah.
And I can understand this is not something that every hunter can do.
Yeah.
But there is, let's say, a way in the middle where they are bred to do that. They should be able, let's say, once or two every week at least to be out in the fields hunting. Yeah. Because it's like, for me, if I have to spend a week at the computer editing, then I really need 1 or 2 days in the mountains, just not even hunting, but just enjoying the mountain, you know?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, you're there was every single aspect of observing your father with the dogs. You know, you could see his you know, his passion and his you know, his commitment to the dogs. And when you first brought me to his home to show me the kennel, you know, I grew up both sets of my grandparents lived on the same road that we did, and all within like a quarter mile of each other. And so I had grandparents live next door to me, and then just down the road a little bit, my other set of grandparents, my father's parents, we had a small farm. And you know, my grandfather would always, he kept everything super clean. You know, we had lots of hogs, lots of pigs, cows and chickens, and everything was super clean. And you know, people would come there and they'd comment on it and almost kind of make fun of them sometimes, you know. And my grandfather would look at them and say, animals are only as clean as you keep them, you know. And I, that always stuck with me, you know, when I was a kid. And I'm pretty obsessive about keeping the dogs clean, the kennels clean, everything clean. And so when you showed me your, you know, your kennel, and you know, it was absolutely spotless. And this was even at a time that, like, your dad was sleeping. He didn't even have a chance to do anything yet because he had just come off a long work shift, you know, and everything was spotless and clean. Just so much pride and passion there, you know, and the individual kennels with the with, you know, just the name, place, the date of birth, the parents, the beautiful photos and paintings, you know, over each of them. It's just very obvious how much he cares for the dogs and the effort. And anytime somebody commits themselves like that to anything in life, but you know, talking about the dogs, I always know that I'm dealing with the person that I want to deal with, you know, for the as to the reason why I came, as to the reason why you know, to see you. It was very refreshing and to see the level of commitment and passion that your father had there. You know, and as far as you guys, you know, you guys are kind of a team, obviously, as you jokingly call your father the boss, you know. You and your brother work the dogs in the mountains with your father as often as you both can. Tell us a little bit about you know, you and your brother, and kind of where you know, how you guys kind of fit into the dogs. I know in the past you've had your own dogs growing up, and your brother now has you know, kind of a couple dogs of his own, you know, under your dad's guidance and care there. So just tell us a little about the two of you and your involvement there over the years.
I think like being together when we were younger, and let's say like starting together, we really helped our passion because we were not alone, and finding people of our age, it's very difficult here in Italy. Like when we were 6 or I was 6, my brother was 3 years old. We were already following my father at trails with dogs, then training them in the, let's say, in the easier spot, especially in the flat areas. And so we, I think I got my first setter when I was 10, and I was following my father through all the whole season hunting in the mountain. At the start, he was probably just waiting for me to walk around because you know, it's tough hunting, and for a young kid it was not easy, but it really taught me the commitment and the work you need to put on something that you like. And my brother's the same, so he was seeing me doing the those stuffs, and even if he was 3 year younger, he just wanted to come along. So basically, all the way from 10 years old to 18, when we got the hunting license, we were hunting, all the three of us, together with my father, and we were following him all days. Like we were even on the Wednesday, because it's so short the season. On the Wednesday, sometimes my father was like, "Do you want to come with me tomorrow with dogs and hunt?" And how do you say, like, not going to school?
He didn't have to ask you two times, right? You
No. We were 100% with him. So,
Those Cavalia kids, they always seem to not be in school on Wednesdays in October.
October and November was really tough that we were on school on Wednesday. But except that it's this is probably what really made this a it's very very big passion for me, and now it's basically a work. It's because I learned I grew up with it, so I learned when I was younger what to do, and it's with dogs especially. it's really about timing, you know. Like for you, like a trainer, you know that a movement in the right moment on the left or on the right can change where the dog is going to go, how the ant is going to go. Like if you go 50 meters to the right, you can maybe don't find 3 or 4 covey of animals that you maybe find if you go 50 meters to the left. So it's really about the time you spend doing this passion. And since I was 10, all the way now that I'm 28, I basically like not miss a single hunting day.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's great. And you know, I had a great time that day on that what was it, a Sunday. You know, you had to leave for a job, but I had a great day with your father and your brother. You know, the joy and the passion that, you know, the entire family has for, you know, being in the mountains with the dogs certainly shines through in each and every one of you. And it's great to see. You guys are a little younger than I am, and you know, I'm very grateful that we are able to make this connection together. And you know, I look forward to, you know, seeing you and your brother, you know, hopefully, you know, several times throughout our lives and getting to work dogs here and there. That's great. It's just a great experience. But talking about great experiences and talking a little bit more about my trip over there, as I mentioned, my international travel has been very limited in my life. And so that was a big thing for me to come over there and meet you and the dogs. And as you mentioned, for your work, you know, you kind of get outside your comfort zone and you see things you never seen before and you experience things that you haven't experienced. And, you know, that's usually when we achieve great things. And this was you know, I've been telling all my friends back here when they asked me how the trip was to Italy. And I said, the only reason it was not a once in a lifetime trip is because it's not going to be my last time there. you know, you guys, again, the generosity, the hospitality was amazing. Everybody was super nice. The reputation that, you know, Italy has for its food was, you know, I'm a pretty simple guy. I'm good with, just a hamburger and some French fries, but, you know, all the food that we had and the restaurants that we ate in and the company was just great. Obviously your mountains are gorgeous and just breathtaking, and the birds, it was you know, really awesome. It's funny, you know, I've as far as wild bird species, you know, where I live is the only birds that I've ever seen. You know, North America has, you know, many, you know, well over a dozen species of birds, you know. And I've hunted the ruffed grouse, woodcock. And then we also have spruce grouse here in my home state, which is protected. You can't hunt them, but there's a decent number of them that we come across. But it's funny, you know, there's many species across my country that I haven't seen. And here I am in, you know, the second time traveling internationally and pursuing 3 different species in another country. That was very fascinating to me. And getting to meet a couple of the litters, we went to your friend Dario's, and your father brought me to one of his friends that had a Duca daughter and had some puppies on the ground, and that was really awesome. You know, the hunting strategy I found very interesting, you know, just learning what makes sense and why it works. You know, where I live now, you know, and even where I lived growing up, you know, you could drive your truck or ride an off-road vehicle to where you start hunting, and you can hunt, you know, say you had several dogs in the truck, you can hunt, and this is true all around our country pretty much. You can hunt for an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, you know, and go back to your truck, you know, water your dog, check them over, put them in the crate, and get another dog out from the truck and then hunt a different direction or just drive down the road a little bit. And that doesn't happen where you live. You know, it's you bring every dog that you're going to hunt that day with you, because if we start hunting at 6,000 feet, you know, you might end up at 9,000 feet and there's no going back to get the other dog you want to run. And I saw very, very quickly, you know, just a couple hours into our first day of working the dogs together in the mountains, how, you know, every dog has to come and how the dogs just accept it. You know, I think here in the United States, most, because it's not our system, everybody's dogs would be very poorly behaved you know, staying on the leash, you know, for an hour or two. And I found it fascinating, you know, like your father would be watching the two dogs running up on the side of the mountain, and here you are and him, you know, you have five other dogs on the leashes, loose leash, just, you know, watching the other dogs work just like the people are, you know. And you know, very, very a very sensible system given your terrain. And you know, it's just very, very fascinating aspect that I wasn't expecting that at all. But it's funny, you know, all the following you on Instagram for years and seeing all these photos and videos of, you know, you or your father or your brother walking a few dogs on a leash. I'm like, they're in the mountains. Why are they walking these dogs on leashes? You know? And it makes complete sense now, having experienced it myself. So interesting to learn the hunt strategies and systems based on the elevations and terrain that you guys hunt so much. And you know, I would imagine when you came to the United States, or maybe even other countries that are just flatter, you know, more flat, you've noticed how people can go back and forth to their vehicle to get different dogs, you know?
Yeah, but also here in Italy, it's like, this is something that is very typical from the mountain, because if you hunt woodcock in the lower area, or if you hunt in the flat area of Italy,
yeah,
if you have the opportunity to just leave the dog on the van and then maybe on 2 hours go back, change them, water them, as you said, is for sure the best option. Is that only up here we don't have any other option. So they just learn, maybe like in the first season, they are the start, very anxious. They want to, like you said, they maybe misbehave a little bit. And then they just understand that they need to see the other dogs and wait for their turn. So it's something that... let's say not typical, but like they need to learn that in order to be able to stay out the whole day and not get wasted just pulling on the leash, you know?
Yes, well, it's really awesome to witness you know, how you guys work the dogs there. And again, the system is just absolutely sensible to save their nose time so they're not wasting any energy, and how they've adapted to that just being the norm for when they're not working and hanging out with you. I found it really cool just to, like I said in the past, see your father watching the dogs work on the landscape and the dogs at his side also watching the dogs work on the landscape. And it was pretty awesome. Speaking of working the dogs, I definitely have to say the highlight of my entire trip was the day that we were in black grouse cover the entire day, and got to see all the dogs work, of course. But Duca had a great day. He found quite a few birds, and one of the birds that he had found, he was on point, first went on point 90 meters up the mountain from where we were. You kind of directed us in that direction. You had him on a Garmin Astro unit, and he was up the hill there. So your father started walking. I started to follow with him. And in real time, this track that was over 300 yards from
where Duca first went on point to where we flushed the bird took us about 13 minutes based on that terrain. And Duca very, very meticulously staying true to that track and being very cautious and connected to your father. So we got up to Duca, and once we got up there, Duca started to cautiously proceed up that track. And as we were moving through it, it was really cool. Duca tracked right over fresh black grouse feather of a male. And I actually picked that up and hold that in the video that I had made. So we continued up this track with Duca, and it was just beautiful to watch your father work him and the synergy that existed between Duca and your father as they worked up the trail. They were just leapfrogging with each other up that trail. And then you could see the point at which clearly the bird scent got fresher and hotter, and Duca was more difficult to move up the trail of the bird. So your father had to examine that area more thoroughly and then go back to Duca, and then he proceeded up trail. And that's something that I experience with my dogs all the time, and that really resonated with me. There were a couple points where there were some gusts of wind on the mountain as we were going up there, and he would get off trail periodically and do these nice big circles, you know, 40 to 60 meters, and he'd get back on the trail. He'd be locked up there. We'd spot him further up the mountainside, and we would get up to him, and then he'd start continuing to trail. And then we got this big gust of wind, and he cast it off kind of like on this plateaued area, locked up on the mountainside on this kind of like this little ledge. And your father just knew that that was a scent cone that he had the bird on. And so he started jogging over that way. The bird went up in front of your father, and we put up the bird that was in between Duca and us. And I got a good shot on the video of the male black grouse flying from left to right across the screen, going down the mountain. And that was just awesome. And we get to see Duca, you know, standing, holding point up on that mountainside at the end there. And that was the highlight of my trip for sure. Gave me goosebumps. I turned to you and your brother as you guys caught up to us. And I said, I can die happy now. That was everything I came to see, and exactly what I was hoping to see and experience. And I was so lucky to get that on all on film. And the video came out really good. I fast-forwarded through some of our walking up the mountain to Duca huffing and puffing times, and added some nice music to it to cover up some of my panting as I'm going up the mountain following your father and Duca. But it was just an absolutely amazing experience, something that I experience with my dogs all the time, very similarly. In my kind of cover. So that was just an unbelievable moment, and made the whole trip for me, and I was ready to give all you guys a big hug after we had that experience. For anybody that would like to see that 8-minute video, you can go to my website, paintriverlewellens.com or paintriversetters.com. Go to the Sires page and scroll down for Duca. I have a couple of videos of him there, some from Andrea and this one from me that I just described. It's pretty cool to see. Different people like different style dogs, but this is certainly my kind of dog and what I've been working for in the breeding program for the last 20 years to create. So it was just made my whole trip, certainly made the day, but made the whole trip.
Okay, so hopefully our audio there. Apologies to everybody if we have a glitch in there that we have to work through. But we're talking about Duca and me getting to come over to see him, and one of the things that I had in my head when I was coming over to see you guys, as you probably had in your head as well originally, was for, you know, if I liked what I saw, you know, you invited me over years ago and you said, yo, you should come over and see the dogs work, see if, you know, this is a right fit and this is worth the direction you might want to go with bringing in some new blood into my dogs. And so we set this up for we were talking in 2018. We set this up, you know, hopefully for training season with the dogs in the Alps in 2020. And then COVID happened. And so that kind of got put on the back burner and I reached back out again last winter. And, you know, we set this up for this training season, all with the hopes of while I certainly was thinking beyond Duca, he was the dog that inspired this trip for me. And, you know, I get over there and I like everything that I see with Duca. And then you said, you know, my father, he usually tries to, you know, place his dogs before they get too old and they still have hunt life in them. They still have breeding, you know, life in them yet. And, that's kind of always been his system, you know, maybe 7 years old or close to that, you know, for the very good dogs that stay with him that long. And so it went from maybe being able for me to, get, you know, Duca offspring, in the future, a year or a few away to the possibility of actually, buying Duca and bringing him back to the United States. So that was something that kind of evolved throughout the course of my stay there, and a very surreal and unbelievable moment for me. And obviously, I'm sure you could tell, while I enjoyed working and seeing all the dogs, you could tell that I very much was attracted to Duca, and all the things that I had hoped he would be, he is. So, you know, I was able to logistically figure out how to get Duca here, and first time I've ever imported a dog. And you know, certainly we had a lot of logistical moving parts that you and I worked on with the shipper to be able to make it happen, but
yeah, it wasn't easy, and as you said, was the first time for everyone. So
yeah, I mean, in the end, I think the fact that we were just both new to it is what made it you know, it wasn't difficult, but just a lot of moving parts to it. So but yeah, we got him here. Duca is now here in the United States with me at my facility, and he arrived on September 2nd. I think it's really cool to think that, you know, you guys were working him on black grouse, like probably the weekend before, you know, and the following weekend I have him here in my woods, in my backyard, pointing ruffed grouse. But he and I are, continuing the bond. And, while I have no doubt he misses your father, yeah, you wouldn't know it by seeing him. At least he's very much follows me all over the place, and I take him out just only one day since he's been here. I have not had him out, and he's working very nice. He's had 9 rough grouse contacts so far, and he's handled them all beautifully. The early season cover here is very, very thick, so I've been continually getting videos of him on point, but I have not been able to get the bird flushing on the video yet because all the leaves and thick vegetation right now, but it will happen. But he's doing terrific. I'm just,
I'm glad to hear that. And, you know, when, as you said, my father usually, like, when his favorite dog, they start to be like 7 or 8.
Yeah.
I think he gets The last dog we had all the way to his older age and all the way until he died, he was the Lupin, Dello Zorino, the father of Duca.
Mm-hmm.
And when he was old, that he wasn't able to hunt anymore and he wasn't able to take him out with him anymore, I think for my father, it's kind of sad, no?
Yeah.
So if he can find a family that can take care of the dog and where he's going to spend a happy last part of the life.
Yeah.
He always likes to go for that because he saw how much you love dogs and how much you like Duca. So for him was like easier to say, okay, I've enjoyed Duca 6 years now, and maybe it's time that I focus on some young dog. And also like he feels that to me that he gets the most out of his passion, the most reward when he's seeing a young dog making something really good that maybe he wasn't expecting.
Yes.
And when you were there, for me, like Duca did some really great work on birds.
Mm-hmm.
For my father, they were like normal, no? He was like, Duca, this is how it does. So
yeah.
I'm very happy that you have him now, and I'm sure he's going to be like a very happy dog for a lot of years.
Yes, no, I think he's just has a terrific personality, good temperament. You know, he's instantly gets along with all the dogs here. You know, he came while I still had a lot of my young puppies here for training that have now all left through this past weekend. And, you know, he was around as many as, you know, out in the dog yard. You know, I have several acres fenced in, and he was out with like the first day he came, you know, I got him on a Friday. Saturday, he was in the dog yard with 20 dogs, and he was, you know, happy as could be, good with everybody, you know, not an aggressive bone in his body, you know, very, very good with all the dogs. And now all the training dogs are gone, and some young started training dogs are gone that I had. And I had, you know, like your father, when you have a decent number of dogs, sometimes, you know, as they get older, you know, it's a very painful and it hurts the heart, but, you know, sometimes placing your older dogs where, they will still be like the main dog, you know, in the family, is best for the dogs as much as, it's very painful to have them go. You know, I've recently placed some adults and that I've had for a long time. And as I'm telling all my friends right now, it's Heartbreak Hotel around here seeing them go. But they're in wonderful homes. They get to hunt and they get to be with the family all the time. And it's how every breeder hopes that all their dogs, you know, live their lives. And so now with Duca here, you know, we're down to 9 dogs, and that includes one very young puppy that I held on to from some summer litter that I had. But so we're down to 9 dogs, you know, ranging in age from first year hunter to 10 years old. And Duca will be on the main string of dogs, and he'll be hunting every day and getting a day off once in a while. And I'm sure he will appreciate not having to go up and down mountains. you know, and still get to be on a lot of birds. The mountains, I'm sure, are a lot on the dogs as they get older, you know. But yeah, he's doing really well. He's seen some birds already and has done a great job. And actually, I'm fairly certain that today, Duca, and I didn't have any trouble getting his registrations transferred over here. But today he is likely to be bred to his first American dog. So one of my girls, I didn't think she'd be coming into heat until another month or so from now, for me to make that decision or not. But I think Duca might have some offspring here in the U.S. Come November if everything goes well. So obviously I'll keep you guys informed on that. That'll be some exciting news. Yeah, that's all things Duca. We're very excited about that. I'd love for you to kind of share what your what your career plans are. You're a very intelligent and talented young guy with the camera, and hopefully perhaps some of our listeners are business owners in the outdoor field, and maybe we'll be fortunate enough to reach out to you and have you come to the U.S. to do some work. But just share with our audience what your plans are going forward.
Yes, as you know, I'm working in two main fields. One is a outfitter or a guide here in Italy for people that like to hunt big game, and we have I think three groups in the next few weeks that they are coming over to hunt chamois. And they are from the US. I'm not really sure where they are from, but it's like very interesting, I think, for people that like goat hunting or like mountain hunting, because you get food that is very important in the mix, but you get very nice hunting ground. You get animals that they are not seen anywhere else except like New Zealand. And the hunt is like can be done all day long. It's not like for most of the big game, you need to be early up in the morning, then during the days waiting time, and then again at night when in the evening is a good time again to hunt. Chamois, you can stay out all day and enjoy the mountains, enjoy the walking, and getting some stalks on. So most of the people that come, they are really happy, and they come again. And we are growing up on this kind of business. And when I'm not guiding, this season I planned all of the videos in Europe. So I was in Croatia to do a Red Deer Rat movie. I'm going to be traveling in 2 weeks' time. And then there is a guy that is coming over to hunt red deer with us. Maybe you know him. He has a show in outdoor TV also. He's a colleague of mine, because he works with Frankie USA, that is called Nick Hoffman, I think. So we've been doing that with him also, and it's always nice to share hunting experience with guys like him that have hunting basically all around the world, and can always be like good, so you improve. And as you said, if there is anyone listening that wants more information, I would be more than happy to reply to them. I don't know. I have a website, very easy, like andreacavaglia.com. If they want any more information, I'll be happy to help.
Yeah, and you're also You're on Instagram as well, and you know, they can find you there as well. But yeah, hopefully we can get you some U.S. work at some point. In either case, whether we get you work in the U.S. or not, we will find a way to get you and Marta back here someday. So
I love that.
We'll make it happen. We'll make
yeah,
it happen.
Yeah, we have our busy season are more or less in the same timing.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we will be there and we will be hunting with you.
Yep. No, we'll definitely make that happen. We'll figure it out. Well, Andrea, I really appreciate you taking the time today to come on the show and give the audience some insight as to what you do and your involvement, not just with film and the outdoors, but also being raised with setters and you know, everything your father has instilled in you with the dogs. And I could not be more grateful to you and your family for you know, this relationship that we've developed and bringing Duca here. And I look forward to you know, sharing with you as the season goes on how he's doing and getting some video and photos to you guys. And hopefully it'll put a smile on your father's face to know the life that he's living over here.
Thank you very much for the opportunity. I hope that my English was okay and that you guys can understand me. I will try to train a little bit for the next time. Okay.
Yeah. Well, it was very good. As I say, your English is far better than my Italian. So, all right. That's great. Thank you.